This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. Dr. Robin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist in the studio with us. We are discussing adult ADHD today, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. We always talk about ADHD when it comes to the children, but many of us are struggling at work right now because of problems like, you know, you're being disorganized, you're easily distracted, you're restless, you're unable to follow directions. It's as simple as that. And it is estimated that a significant proportion of ADHD in childhood can continue into the adult years. So that's what we're going to be discussing today with Dr. Robin. If you have a question for us, phone lines open 0377109000, tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. Welcome to the show, Dr. Robin. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. Good afternoon to you and to everyone out there.
What is ADHD? How can you sum up? How would you best define it?
Okay. Well, ADHD stands for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Okay. Well, essentially, it's a brain disorder, and it's defined by ongoing patterns of inattention and/or hyperactivity or impulsivity that interferes with functioning or development. Okay. So let's talk a bit more about that. It's a nice definition, but
Absolutely.
What does it actually mean? Okay.
Yeah.
So there are three main components. There's inattention, there's hyperactivity, and impulsivity. Okay? So how do we define inattention? It's a situation where you're off task in terms of what you're doing, or you can get off task easily, inability to persist at a task that you're doing, lack of sustained focus when you're trying to do something, being disorganized. And it's important to note that this is not secondary to being defiant or having a lack of understanding of what you're doing. It is just an inability to actually be attentive. Okay, so that's inattention.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have hyperactivity, restlessness, moving around constantly, fidgeting, having this internal sensation of having to want to get up and move. And this is an indication of hyperactivity. Or even just running around restless, a lot of the time. So that's hyperactivity. Then there's impulsivity, okay? And this is hasty actions in the moment, okay? They have a high potential for harm, for example. Individuals are unable to delay gratification. That means they want to do something immediately. They can't wait or they can't postpone whatever it is that they think they want to do or they need to do. And people who interrupt other people when they speak, mm-hmm. that's impulsivity. But I have to make a note that these three things, inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, these are, to diagnose ADHD, they have to be on the extreme end of the spectrum, because all these traits are normal.
Yes.
We all have them.
I was just about to say, am I ADHD?
Well,
I have ADHD?
I'm a bit concerned that people may listen to this and go away thinking, oh my goodness, I have this.
I already think I do.
Well, a certain amount of inattention, hyperactivity, impulsivity is normal, but we have to understand that it has to be something that interferes with your everyday functioning and your enjoyment or your experience of life. Okay.
So some amount of dysfunction.
Yeah, which can cause harm to the individual, more severe end of the spectrum of, behavioral problems. And it interferes how they interact socially and at work. So that's it in a nutshell. So three things to remember, inattention, hyperactivity, impulsivity.
Does it all have to exist to make a diagnosis?
Well, that's a good question. Yes and no. You have to have certain number of symptoms in order for a diagnosis to be made. But one of the questions which your very hardworking producer asked me is, what's the difference between ADHD and ADD?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were going to ask me that as well at some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
The difference is the letter H.
Yes, hyperactivity. Yes, of course.
So there is hyperactivity component, and there are people who have attention problems without hyperactivity. Now, those people have predominantly inattention and impulsivity, no hyperactivity. So the original thing that you asked me was, Sorry, what was the
original? The definition of it. But do all three have to exist for a diagnosis?
That's right. So you can have inattention and impulsivity without the
hyperactivity. Would be just ADD then?
Yes, ADD. So that's the difference between ADHD and ADD.
Okay. It's an inherited neurodevelopment disorder. So does that mean it's all genetics? It's something that you inherit?
Yes, largely. The genetic component of... So what causes it? The genetic component of ADHD is extremely heritable. So what that basically means is that about two times the amount of contribution comes from genetics. So two times compared to other mental health conditions like anxiety or depression. So it's something that you can pretty much inherit quite easily from your parents, okay? But it is a polygenic inheritance. So what that means is that many genes are involved, between 25 to 45 genes. And the presumption is that if there are more genes that actually express this disorder, the more severe the conditions. Although that, you know, we can't entirely verify that. And more genes might be activated by environmental conditions, for example, you know, whatever that may be. But certainly it's a genetic thing. And all these genes are found in the brain. They're not found anywhere else in the body.
Yeah.
And but there are other things that can also predispose to ADHD, scientific data is they've got this lovely term called neurologically compromising events. Mm-hmm. You know, basically they're talking about early onset brain injury, either in utero or just after you're born. Premature babies have a higher incidence of ADHD and ADD as they get older. Maternal alcohol use and cigarette smoking during pregnancy is a big one. And something like there is a 2.5 times increase in incidence of ADHD in kids whose mothers have used alcohol or smoked. Now, to what extent using alcohol and what extent smoking is unclear, but certainly there's a much, much higher incidence of ADHD. And then there's other things like they talk about toxins. Now, that's a very vague term, toxins. But in particular, one of the things that comes up over and over again is mercury. So mercury exposure to the baby while it's in utero. And I guess in this day and age, when we don't really use mercury thermometers much anymore, and you know, if you're not biting on your thermometer and swallowing the mercury, the most likely source of mercury that we get is from our diets.
Correct. And seafood.
Fish.
Okay.
Large fish, yeah. Okay.
Right. It affects... What's happening is it's affected the production of dopamine, am I correct?
No. It affects the way dopamine is utilized.
Okay.
And affects the nerves that, you know, also affect the transmission of dopamine and the receptors that are involved. So it's not just as easy to say as the production of dopamine. It is... it's the way it's used, the way it's transmitted, and also talks about the way these genes also influence the way the dopamine neurons are managed and function.
Yeah. Okay. So those are the causes. But what determines whether ADHD will progress into adulthood? Because does it mean that a significant proportion of children with ADHD will eventually just live with ADHD, even in adulthood?
Sadly, yes. 65%. It has been shown in a study done in 2006 where they looked at... It was a very interesting study where they looked at people who apply for driving licenses, adults who apply for driving licenses in the states of Massachusetts and they in the U.S. And they did this survey of all these people and they found the incidence of ADHD was... And then, of course, they identified these people and looked back at the histories and they found that something like 65% of them as adults had ADHD diagnosed when they were kids.
Are you ever too old to have ADHD? Can you develop it later on in life?
No, it is a developmental problem. So it would have been there in some shape or form from the very beginning. You're never too old to have it, but the expression of the ADHD will change as you get older.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have Peter on the line. You have a question, Peter. Go ahead.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I wanted to find out about this ADHD in adults, so how does it manifest itself, and how do you treat it? Because obviously, I think somebody I know, I'm trying to help them deal with issues in at their work, but I'm not sure whether what the condition is and whether there's any way we can help somebody that basically somebody is very disorganized, somebody who knows they have to do things a particular way, tries very hard, but is unable and very distracted, unable to deal with, always changing, not able to finish tasks, blah, blah, blah. And they know that it's an issue, but they can't do anything. I'm not sure whether that is the kind of condition. Can you advise?
Sure. Thank you very much, Peter. Thanks for that. So what causes it, and how do you treat it as an adult? What causes we've gone through, but yeah. What about the treatment?
I think he talked about how do you recognize it, didn't he? He mentioned how do you recognize it and what do you do about it, which is one of the things two of the things we were going to come to, I think, eventually. How do you recognize it based on what we just mentioned, impulsivity, hyperactivity, inattention? But in adults in particular, you've got to look at people who are easily distracted by external stimuli. People who often make decisions impulsively, they have difficulty stopping actions or behavior that they should stop and do and move on to other things. And that's hyper-focus sometimes in some instances, which is an interesting thing which we should talk about. Sometimes they can start a project or a task without reading or listening to directions carefully, which basically describes all men. poor follow-through on promises and commitments, difficulty or trouble doing things in sequence and order. And in men, for example, in particular, driving faster and dangerously, difficulty sustaining attention in tasks, being disorganized, all the things that he talked about actually are pretty much suggestive of adult ADHD.
Before we just move on to the treatment option, how does it present differently in women compared to men?
Okay, that's a good one. It does definitely present differently. In women, there tend to be more inattentive problems, especially in young girls. I mean, we're talking about adults here, but the natural progression for girls in school is inattentive, dreamy, in a world of their own, so to speak. And I guess that follows through in women as well. But so that's the sort of different presentation. The men tend to be probably more impulsive and hyperactive. But what's interesting is talking about presentation of differences between the two different sexes. What's interesting is that presentation manifests itself more in terms of the consequences of ADHD, which can be distinguished by the two sexes. Like, for example, in men, they're more prone to car accidents, although men always say women drive more, worse than men do. But actually, men have far more car accidents than women do. So men with ADHD, more prone to car accidents, substance abuse, anger management problems, behavioral problems, problems at work, conflicts, arguments, even fights, whereas women would tend to have more depression, anxiety, low self-esteem as a result of not being able to, achieve whatever they want to achieve. Conflicts at home, in married life. A lot of married women, with ADHD can be overwhelmed when they have a child, for example, when they can't organize themselves to do whatever they need, they need to do for their baby. And some women, and this is a very interesting one, which I was reading about, which is eating disorders, particularly inability to control what you eat. So obesity can result as a feature of ADHD or ADD, if you like, in women. But in both sexes, I guess, but they describe it more in women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll come back and continue this discussion on ADHD. If you have a question for Dr. Robin Gonzaga, we're discussing adult ADHD. The number to call is 0377-109000, tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasudhi. In our Health and Living segment, Dr. Robin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist, we are discussing adult ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. As Dr. Robin explained earlier, three features to recognize when it comes to ADHD: inattention, hyperactivity, as well as impulsivity. It's sort of a genetically inherited neurodevelopmental disorder, affects children. children. And as you said, Dr. Rubin, based on research, about 65% of children will live with ADHD as adults as well. Now, what are the factors, though, that, you know, sort of determines this progression into adulthood? Well, 65%, what determines, what about the other 35% who you know, were able to get over it or symptoms got less as they grew older?
Yeah, most things mellow with age. And so that was the belief about ADHD generally. So in that one third, you know, roughly of, you know, people who do not, you know, of kids and adolescents who do not have problems with ADHD as they get older, one third of them sort of grow out of it, so to speak. Okay. But unfortunately, 65% of them do go on to have ADHD or ADHD traits or ADHD-type problems in their adulthood. They don't necessarily have to fall into the full diagnostic criteria of ADHD and have treatment in that sense, right? So what are the factors that we see in children that would predict in ADHD progression into adulthood? Number one, mainly, the severity of ADHD in childhood. So
it's a spectrum then?
Yes.
Okay.
If it was severe in the sense that it was quite disruptive to their functioning in school and to their academic performance and caused some secondary impairments such as, for example, anxiety, and which is quite common. You can get a lot of secondary mental health conditions as a result of ADHD, like anxiety, depression, mostly. So if these things were present, there's a higher likelihood that this will ADHD will, you know, progress into adulthood. The other thing that also is present in kids is if they have a comorbid, like an existing conduct disorder, which is kind of like very bad behavior seen in kids due to emotional dysfunction, that would also, you know, predispose ADHD to progress into adulthood. As we talked about earlier, having mood and anxiety disorders, which are the secondary things, if you like, if they are present along with ADHD in late childhood, they would progress into adulthood as well, and with the ADHD. Problems with emotional regulation, that means anger management, for example, is another predictor. Poor functioning at school, we talked about, with people with social problems, problems interacting with other kids, because sometimes with the impulsivity, they have difficulty communicating or saying inappropriate things and getting into, you know, little skirmishes at school. Behavioral problems, like, for example, with the teachers. Parental conflict or parental mental health problems. Now, we talked about the high heritability of ADHD from your parents. Mm-hmm. So if a parent has ADHD and a child has ADHD, so that it is, and if they're living in a sort of a dysfunctional, home or a home where there's a lot of, where there are a lot of issues, then that would be also a predictor of progression into adulthood. And we just said family history of ADHD is actually the most significant predictor that it would sort of keep going into adulthood.
Okay. Do you see many adults coming forward to get tested? Because I can imagine back in the day, nobody really recognized ADHD until, not very long ago. But those adults now are living with ADHD without knowing it. I mean, do they actually come forward or do most of them just try and cope, on their own?
Well, yes, we are seeing more and more people come forward. A lot of people who do research, I mean, thanks to Dr. Google, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. But then there are these ADHD self-test questionnaires that you can do online. And a lot of people have done that. And then they come in saying, doc, do I have this? Can you test me for it? Can you, diagnose this in me, because it might explain some of my issues. So, yes, a lot of people do come in. But the other point is sometimes we pick up ADHD in adults when they come in with their secondary problems, which is depression, anxiety. And unfortunately, the one that presents most often is actually substance abuse, because there's a much higher incidence of substance abuse in people and in adults with ADHD.
How do you then get through this and get to the underlying problem? I mean, you've got substance abuse problem already.
Yep.
And then how do you get to the root cause of the substance abuse, which is actually ADHD? I mean, is it very difficult to do?
No. It just entails you taking a very careful history and, you know, going through every single detail of that person's life from the time they were young, from as far back as they can remember. And that's the importance of history taking,
right,
where you sit down, you look at the behavior patterns, you look at, you know, the academic performance. And one of the things I like to do, if people do keep these records, is to get their school report cards out.
Oh, I have mine. So I can use it when I need it.
I think I still have mine as well. I think my mum has it in a box somewhere. But school report cards tell you an awful lot.
Really?
Yeah. One of the most common things you see are not achieving full potential.
Right.
In you know, kids with ADHD, which are not diagnosed in the past, or needs to try harder, not applying themselves well enough, you know. These are the kind of comments that we tend to see, and it's almost like as though they just pop up, you know, for sure in people with ADHD. It's almost, you know, when I get the report cards and I start, you know, sort of look through them, I'm like, oh, there you are. The evidence has always been there. Just that it's never been picked up before.
Right. But are we then misdiagnosing with so much of information, and now the DSM-5 actually recognizes adults ADHD?
Yeah.
But, you know, as children, I mean, the minute a child is hyper, we all tend to think that our children have ADHD or ADD, one of it, you know. So are we misdiagnosing as well?
In adults or in children?
In children. Let's start with the children first, because the adults always, obviously, yep, were not diagnosed most often. But with the children, we're misdiagnosing.
I think there is a bit of danger in that, you know, because sometimes other mental health conditions can present with ADHD-type symptoms. So there's quite a significant overlap. I mean, we talked about conduct disorders, right?
Yeah.
There's another one called oppositional defiant disorders, which are seen in kids. And, you know, other things like, you know, for example, anxiety disorders, you know, in kids can present like ADHD. So, again, this involves a very careful history and observation, and also teachers' reports. So part of the process is to get the teachers to hand in, to fill out a kind of a questionnaire. We usually give them the Connors questionnaire for teachers. Russell Barkley, who's a big name in ADHD from the States, has got also a teacher's questionnaire, which tells a lot, because there are two views. One is the parental view. So some of the problem behaviors, which you don't see at home, present at school,
right,
and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to get, you know, the teacher's point of view and the parent's point of view as well.
Okay. So let's look at the management. Now that the DSM-5 recognizes adult ADHD, how has that changed the way you approach adults and treatment and how they should be managed?
How does it change the way I approach?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think in the first instance, the DSM-5 has made it easier to diagnose ADHD in adults by looking at some of the diagnostic criteria, and also, making it in a sense that you require less symptoms for the diagnosis of adult ADHD than you did in the past, okay? So it's helped in that sense, but it also has helped us give people who need a label a label.
Is that necessarily a good thing?
Well, I mean, it helps, because a label will then help with treatment and prognosis. I mean, yeah, a lot of people don't like having a label, but then there are people who feel relieved sometimes once they've been diagnosed with, you know, with something, because, you know, a lot of time people will come and say, you know, all my life I've been told I've been useless, I will amount to nothing, and I don't try hard enough, I'm stupid, and they're actually not. They're, you know, people with high IQ and who are quite intelligent, you know, so it helps them.
I was reading one person who wrote online about living with ADHD as an adult, and she says she'd rather think of it as a creative personality type. What are your thoughts on that?
In terms of?
Just instead of calling herself ADHD, but you know, the how she copes with things and all that.
Sure,
she feels she's just a creative personality type.
Yeah. No, I have no issue with people calling themselves anything they want to call themselves, you know, because if that works for her, great. You know, that's the way she's coped with it. And a lot of the time, by the time adults come to us for a diagnosis, they've usually coped with this illness for a long time, and they've found strategies and ways to, you know, move around it. For example, like you know, it would be unlikely for someone with hyperactivity to go and, you know, get a law degree, for example. You know, some people might, but then they would find it difficult to sit down and read huge, big books for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. So they might do different kinds of work that, like, you know, creative type work, which, you know, gives them an opportunity to work with their hands or the creative aspect of their life. And, you know, for example, in medicine, I don't know if I should say this, but, you know, you'd see people who are surgeons who show traits of ADHD because...
No!
Well, I think, you know, it's good because they work
Can
with their hands.
Can I ask my surgeon the next time? Have you got yourself checked out?
But they use it to their advantage, you
How
see.
How is that?
Well, because, you know, they're not sitting behind a desk and, you know, like in like what I do, for example, talking to people or listening to people, they would be better off, you know, working with their hands or being in theater. And, you know, what we talked about earlier on, which was hyperfocus, you know. So hyperfocus is a feature of ADHD where people have, they hyperfocus and they spend long periods of time on something. I'll give you an example. You know, kids with ADHD, for example, when you kind of give them a diagnosis, their parents will, you know, come and tell you, well, doctor, I don't see how this can be true because, you know, my son can sit in front of the computer and play computer games for 6 hours without a toilet break and without food and everything else, and he can focus and concentrate very well. But then when you ask him to do his homework, he sits there for 10 minutes and he goes and looks for a snack, and then he wants to check his phone, and, you know, So that is a feature of ADHD, hyperfocus, because they tend to hyperfocus on things that they enjoy and that give them pleasure. Mm-hmm. So this is what I tell sometimes kids with ADHD, you know, play to your strengths. If you find something in your life that gives you pleasure and that you enjoy and that you can spend long periods of time on, then maybe you should make that your calling, provided that it's something that could, you know, give you employment in the future, for example. You know, like kids who like sports, you know, well, do something in the line of sports rather than, you know, perhaps the sort of traditional academic thing where they have to sit in university and face lectures for, you know, 6 hours a day. That just won't work for some people.
So those are some of the employment options. You need to
coping options. Yeah,
figure out what your strengths are and then work on it. Do parents
and that
understand?
Creative lady has done exactly that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do parents understand that though?
Well, that's the big challenge.
I
it depends
I
on
imagine.
The parents, you know. If some parents want their, you know, their kids to be doctors and lawyers and sit down and study for long hours, that just doesn't apply to some kids, you know. And to some adults, for that matter.
Let's talk about coping mechanisms. We have a question here on, and Peter earlier on spoke about, asked about treatment options, but there's a question here, can alternative treatments such as hypnosis or meditation be effective for an adult with ADHD?
I guess hypnosis, from the point of view of treating anxiety or, you know, secondary phenomena, like, you know, like that, could help take the edge off the ADHD. Certainly meditation would be wonderful. I think they're doing some studies on ADHD and meditation. If you can get people to sit down long enough and just focus on their breath, it does help calm them down and sort of make them more grounded. Yeah.
But will they be able to focus? I mean, if
well, that's the challenge. It's like a muscle that you train, isn't it? You know, and with the proper guidance and the proper you know strategies to cope. You know, and maybe for example, they may not be able to do the traditional sitting meditation. Mm-hmm. we might get them to do walking meditation instead. That's
a form of
yes.
Walking meditation?
Well, you see, this is it. I'm telling you to come and try it out, and you've resisted all this time.
I have ADHD.
Yeah, there
it's
is
confirmed.
Walking meditation. We'll talk later. No, but there is walking meditation. There's standing meditation. Oh. There's lying meditation. There's lots of different types of meditation.
Okay, interesting. I know you're very big on meditation. We'll come back and find out a bit more about coping mechanisms when it comes to adults with ADHD. We've not gone through medicines that you can actually take, the drugs. There's also talk about supplements. I'm not sure Dr. Rubin can shed more light on that, as well as other sorts of therapies that you can use as options to manage ADHD as an adult. If you have a question for him, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon. If you have just joined us, I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with me, Dr. Rubin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist. We are discussing adult ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Interesting stuff. Dr. Rubin's actually spoken about how this affects people in childhood, how a lot of it manifests as a problem in adulthood as well. So we're going through coping mechanisms in how you can manage this. It's a spectrum, as you mentioned, Dr. Rubin. But what are some of the coping skills? We've spoken about meditation, for an example. What else can adults do to manage ADHD?
Okay. I think, earlier on we talked about labels, and what I was getting at is basically education, understanding what the conditions, what the condition is and how it potentially affects you. I think that's very important. And I think that's the most important thing you can do because, excuse me, it's a controversial thing, ADHD. Some people don't believe in it. And so, and it has lots of, controversy surrounding treatment and medication and what have you. So I think education and understanding it. And I've come across so many adults who just come talk about it and they feel so much better now that they understand it and then they can take certain measures to help themselves. Like, for example, routine is very important in people with ADHD. Having a regular bedtime routine, having a regular exercise regime, for example. Exercise is one of the things that has been shown to help, in particular cardiovascular exercise, And then having reminder notes for things that you have to do, like a calendar, or put things in your phone, the moment that that you have to do something. I have a patient who has a little blackboard, like the one that you have up here, and he writes, and it's right by his door of his bedroom, so he writes things down that he has to do in the day as they come up, pretty much like a shopping list, okay? So he's reminded as he walks out the door, oh, these are what I have to do. And sometimes he takes a picture of it with his phone as he walks out. So, he doesn't forget things. He's more organized in that respect. Yeah. And if people with ADHD sometimes tend to get overwhelmed by big tasks because it's a case of sustaining your attention to doing something over a sustained period of time. One of the bits of advice we give are if it's a big task, break it down into small steps. For example, I had a lady who was talking to me, and I suppose this could apply to anyone really, who had to move house. And, she's obviously disorganized. She has a history of ADHD.
Moving house is a big
task. It's a big stress. So we talked about it, and I said to her, well, why don't you just, the issue was, where do I start? Mm-hmm. Which is pretty much everyone's, concern, or, it would overwhelm anybody. But think of someone with ADHD who is disorganized in the first instance, right? So we made a plan for her when she comes back from work for about 2 or 3 months before she was planning of a moving date to spend half an hour each day just organizing stuff and putting things away, like things that she wanted to take with her and things that she didn't want to take with her. So strategies like this, break a big task down into small chunks and work on it. And once you got better at that, we increase it from half an hour to 1 hour a day. And before you know it, it was all done.
Fantastic. Okay. Mm. So routine, overwhelmed by big tasks, but we'll come back to coping mechanisms. We have Lynn on the line. You have a question, Lynn.
Okay. Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
So can you say that most people who have ADHD are drug addiction or alcoholic? Can you say that?
Okay. We'll come back and answer that question, Lynn. Thank you very much.
Okay. No, not everyone who has, you know, ADHD ends up as a drug addict or an alcoholic. Absolutely not. Obviously, we don't have exact figures as to how many people with addiction problems have ADHD and vice versa. But, you know, it's not a blanket. Everyone has ADHD.
Okay. Any other coping mechanisms?
Coping
routine, overwhelmed with big tasks?
Calendar, reminder notes, lists, lots of lists, you know, which in themselves can get overwhelming.
I'm taking
too many
notes.
Lists.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I'm taking notes, Dr. Robin. What about medication? When does that become an option?
Yeah. Okay. This is a controversial thing again, and I don't want the message to be that everyone who has a diagnosis of ADHD, and not everyone needs medication. Some people cope with it. It's when it becomes an effort and when it starts to interfere with their functioning. I'll give you an example. I have a patient who's probably seen me for about 10 years now, and he came as a sort of a young adult. He was an executive in a bank at that point, and he was just overwhelmed because he was somewhere in the front office and he, you know, couldn't function very well. We tried to figure out what was wrong, and it was clear there was adult ADHD. He had it all his life, but got away with it until this time. So we talked about it, put him on medication, and it just transformed his life. He said it was as though someone lifted a curtain in front of my eyes and I could finally see what I needed to do and do it clearly. So this went on for a while. Then when he was finally aware of what he needed to do, he started to cut back on the medication. And now, 10 years later, he's a bank manager.
Wow. Yeah, and is he still on medication?
Well, so now he sees me maybe, I don't know, once in 6 months or so, and he comes in for a check-in with me, and he says to me, "Doc, there's only two situations in which I need medication now. One is before the annual report once a year, when I have to sit at my desk for 10 hours a day reading through the reports from, you know, here, there, and everywhere. And the other one is he takes it when he has to go into big meetings." Because he just tunes out after 10 minutes, he says, especially if people are, you know, going on and on about something. He starts doodling, he checks his phone, and he starts fiddling with his buttons and, you know, messing around. So, you know, he takes it before meetings and he takes it for long reports that he has to do. And other things where he requires more sustained attention. But generally speaking, he's almost medication-free. Now, this is an example of someone who went on medication, found out what it did, then found out what he needed to do to adapt to it, and is now, you know, living a life almost medication-free, except for a few instances.
Certain occasions.
Yeah.
Are these all amphetamine-based drugs?
Well, Adderall is the one drug which is basically an amphetamine or amphetamine-based drugs. But the others are stimulant drugs, not amphetamine-based, like Ritalin, Concerta. Those are the two main ones that, well, those are the two drugs we have in Malaysia, really. They're pretty much the same thing. It's just that their delivery mechanism is different. There's another drug which is a non-stimulant ADD drug, which is actually derived from an antidepressant. It was investigated as an antidepressant initially, and then it was eventually found to help with ADHD and ADD. Atomoxetine, it's called, and that's also used, and that's available here. But we also use other drugs, like certain older generation antidepressants, like amitriptyline, that have been around for lots of years. There are other medications that are also used for as not first line drugs, but second and third line drugs. But, you know, drugs are not the entire solution really. Mm. I have to emphasize that.
When you talk about amphetamine based drugs, I mean, does that sort of, are there concerns around addiction?
Well, if you manage the medication properly, you know, then there are no issues with addiction because these are only available on prescription. But to turn it around the other way, like there are some people who abuse drugs, like who, you know, use methamphetamines like ice. Now, some of these people I found who've come and, you know, through history taking and all that, we found they have ADHD, quite severe ADHD. And what they've been doing in actual fact is actually self-medicating. So they've been buying illegal amphetamines and taking them and functioning until things kind of get out of control.
Right.
And so there's an example of how amphetamines can be useful in one instance, and then if it's not used properly and used in the right way, under the right guidance, not so helpful.
Okay. It's just that, you know, it goes back to the fact that you were never diagnosed, you don't know what's wrong, suddenly this thing works.
Yeah.
And then, and you know,
that's
you,
your answer, yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah. then you get addicted to it. What yeah. about supplements? I've heard a lot about supplements being spoken about when it comes to ADHD.
I have no idea on what supplements have
omega
any effect.
3, no. Zinc, you no. know, that sort of thing.
No scientific evidence at this point in time.
Okay, so you're going with meditation, perhaps mindfulness you spoke about when it comes to managing ADHD also?
Well, yes. I mean, mindfulness is a big word, and it's a very complicated word in terms of ADHD. It can be difficult to employ mindfulness techniques when your mind is so scattered, at least initially, in my opinion anyway. But I think there are meditation techniques that you can take away that will help you. And then eventually, hopefully, you can practice some mindfulness methods.
Yeah. You know, Peter spoke earlier about a colleague who
yes.
was struggling, in fact. But how can employers be more supportive of staff with ADHD?
I think it's tough, you know, because ADHD, things like employers might face would be things like problems with deadlines. You know, if someone is scattered and disorganized, they miss their deadlines, they don't come in to work on time. So understanding it and perhaps counseling their employees to take some action, you know, behavioral methods to solve or to try and help address that problem, that might be the best thing to do.
So what's your message on ADHD in adults?
If you think you have it, go see a professional and try and get some information about it, and if possibly a diagnosis, if it's going to help you. And the message is that not everyone needs medication. There are lots of other ways to deal with it, and not every drug addict has ADHD. That's yes. the other thing. You know,
okay.
that's an important thing to remember.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Robin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist on adult ADHD on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.